I'm Marco Werman, and you're with The World. It's good to be back with you, everyone. Summer isn't over yet, not technically, but you know this time of year and how it feels. A little maudlin, a new school year, some uncertainty. Today's big news out of Washington, where we start the show today, is about a lot of uncertainty for people who've benefited from DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. The announcement from Attorney General Jeff Sessions today means the future is very unclear.
I'm here today to announce that the program known as DACA that was effectuated under the Obama administration is being rescinded.
The Trump administration says it will be an orderly wind down of the program, with the effects being felt gradually over time. But what's the future if you are a DACA recipient? You likely came here as a kid, undocumented, with your parents, who were also undocumented, and it was only because of DACA that you were able to go to school and work here without legal problems. Julio Ramos fits that description. Just 3 weeks ago, he started med school at the Yikon School of Medicine at Mount Sinai in New York City. Julio is a 24-year-old former biology teacher from Brownsville, Texas, who's long hoped to become a doctor. So that's his dream. Julio joins us from the halls of the med school. And Julio, I gather you've just finished a lab, but I suspect you heard that Attorney General Sessions declared that DACA will be terminated in 6 months. How are you feeling?
It's a lot to process. I started preparing before it even actually happened. But even just now when you played that clip and hearing his voice finally say those words that program will be rescinded, it just brings a lot of emotions that I thought were already suppressed.
Yeah, no matter how much you anticipated, I guess it is shocking to hear that. So what are you going to do in the short term?
Really, it's just keep going forward. Keep the goal in mind. And that goal in mind for me includes being a physician, but also advocated for the undocumented movement.
Tell us a bit more about your own story, Julio. You got here to the U.S. as a kid. How did you learn you were undocumented?
So I migrated from Mexico, the northern part of Mexico, now 17 years ago. The way that I discovered that I was undocumented was actually in 10th grade. And I was part of the Gear Up program, which was to promote undergraduate programs so that we could basically attend college. And one of those was to the University of Texas at Austin. And there's a checkpoint 100 miles north of the border. So in order to cross that checkpoint, we had to fill out a form. And in that form, it was asked of us the Social Security number. And then when I went back home and parents were the information, that began the conversation of, we don't have any Social Security numbers. We don't have any documentation papers.
What made you decide to become a doctor?
When I was 12, my mother was diagnosed with breast cancer. And it was stage 3 breast cancer. And she actually noticed a lump growing on her breast. But the reason that she didn't want to attend the doctor was because we are undocumented, so we don't have insurance. And she wanted to spare us the medical costs. And ever since then, I started looking into the medical field. When I was 12, I enrolled in a magnet program in high school. We did health science technology classes in 9th and 10th grade. And then we did clinical rotations in the hospital in 10th grade. 12th grade, I interned in a rehab clinic. And then I continued my participation in the medical field as a scribe during college. And while I was doing all of that, a lot of my peers were kind of realizing that it wasn't for them. Hmm. But it was actually the opposite for me. It was just reassuring that this is what I wanted to do. I consider America to be my home. This is the place that I grew up. I learned the language. I'm bilingual. I uphold the American traditions. I am pursuing the American dream.
So your parents, who are undocumented, had hoped to come and see you at a white coat ceremony this month. That's an event for first-year med students who commit to caring for patients. Will they be able to see you?
Since I live below the immigration checkpoint in South Texas, they won't be able to cross the checkpoint, and they won't be able to fly here. So I'll be in the white coat ceremony independently.
How does that make you feel?
I mean, obviously it's a little demoralizing in the sense because it is a tradition and it symbolizes much more than just a white coat, than just a piece of clothing. It signifies your testimony to serve patients, to serve people that you will be working for. And it's something that my family and I have been, it's a family project in a sense where me getting into medical school wasn't solely my efforts. It was the efforts of my family, the people around me that support me. So definitely being by myself will be a little difficult, but hopefully in the end, once I do become a physician, I can just find strength in that. My family and I have expressed that we don't necessarily need to be together for them to support my dreams. Although I'll be alone physically, I'm sure that they are supporting me spiritually.
DACA recipient Julio Ramos. He's in his third week of classes at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai in New York City. We'll let you get back to your lab, Julio. Thanks very much for being with us.
Sure, no problem. Thank you for the opportunity.
Not everyone is outraged by the administration's decision to rescind DACA. There are also people who say getting rid of DACA could pave the way to comprehensive immigration reform. The push for today's move came mostly from a group of state attorneys general who were threatening to sue the federal government if it did not rescind DACA. Mark Krikorian is also a critic of DACA. He's director of the Center for Immigration Studies in Washington. Why do you oppose DACA, Mark?
Well, because it's illegal. There's two separate questions, whether DACA is permissible and separately whether an amnesty for illegal immigrants who grew up here, who came here very young and grew up here, is a good idea. Those are two separate things. To say that we should keep DACA because the beneficiaries of it are sympathetic cases, as in fact they are, is to say that the end justifies the means. And that's never acceptable. DACA is illegal. And President Trump should have ended it on day one. What he has done today actually is provide a soft landing for the DACAs, because the last one would not lose his or her work permit until 2.5 years from now. So this really is, I think, an attempt to let them down easy and to give a grace period of at least 6 months to Congress for them to craft some kind of legislative solution to give a proper lawful amnesty to these young people instead of the illegal one that Obama actually got away with.
So you address several different things there. I want to get to all of them. First of all, you support a legislated amnesty to replace DACA, essentially, if DACA is rescinded?
Yes, I do, although not a freestanding one. It would have to deal with the consequences of any amnesty. So it would have to include both enforcement measures and some legal immigration changes to prevent any of the adults who are responsible for this from benefiting down the road. But yes, in the end, it would be a bill that would, I would support a bill that gave green cards to those people who now have DACA under certain circumstances.
So the end of DACA wouldn't happen until next March, creating, as you said, this window for Congress to come up with some kind of legislation, possibly a comprehensive immigration reform. But do you seriously expect that to happen, given Congress's track record over the last 20-plus years? And immigration reform in particular, despite the urgency, it's been really elusive.
Comprehensive immigration reform is a buzzword for a broader amnesty for all illegal immigrants, with various other measures attached to it. That's not going to happen and shouldn't. What I would suggest for Congress is a targeted measure that does one thing. It's not 1,000 pages long. It does one thing. It legalizes this finite group of roughly 800,000 people who've already been screened by the government to some degree. And as part of that, tries to mitigate the harmful side effects with an enforcement, with an E-Verify requirement, and also by getting rid of some of the family immigration categories that now drive our legal immigration system. You might call it comprehensive immigration reform light or miniature comprehensive immigration reform.
So in the likely event that there is no legislation, as of next March, March 5th next year, about 1,000 DACA recipients each day will revert to being undocumented aliens. What happens to them?
The first thing that won't happen to them is that ICE is not going to have some list and do a dragnet of everybody whose DACA work permits expire. That's a scare tactic that's just not something – that's not the way – ICE just isn't interested in doing that. They got plenty on their hands. What would happen is, as you said, they would revert to being illegal immigrants. The fact is they are going to be in limbo. There's no question about it. And this isn't Donald Trump's fault. It's not even really President Obama's fault. It's the result of decades of unwillingness to enforce immigration laws.
Mark Krikorian, Director of the Center for Immigration Studies in Washington. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Since 2012, hundreds of thousands of undocumented immigrants who were brought to the U.S. as children have benefited from the program. They've been protected from deportation and received permits to work legally in the U.S.
I was frustrated and disappointed that Trump has decided to go through with ending the program. It is cruel and unnecessary.
That's immigration attorney Lily Axelrod. She spoke with us from Memphis, Tennessee. In a minute, she'll help us make sense of what's next for the roughly 800,000 DACA recipients in the U.S. But first, her thoughts on today's announcement by the attorney general.
Jeff Sessions talked about the unaccompanied minors who have recently come to the border to request protection from Central America. That's in the last couple of years, folks fleeing violence from gangs and civil strife and Central America. And he perpetuated this myth that DACA somehow incentivized unaccompanied minors to come. DACA protects people, only people who have been here since 2007. And so it has nothing to do with recent arrivals. So I was disappointed to see him attempting to connect those two things. It's also rich to hear somebody talking about the rule of law and separation of powers when he himself perjured himself in front of Congress and his boss pardoned a sheriff who defied court orders. But I was encouraged to see that the Department of Homeland Security has given a pretty long timeline for folks to renew or keep their status.
Yeah, so, I mean, now that you've done a little digging, break it down for us. What will the timeline of this wind down actually look like?
So DACA is going to be slowly phased out over a period of about 2 or 2.5 years. So folks who currently have deferred action and work permits, their current work permits will be valid until the current expiration date. They're not going to be revoked. Those who expire within the next 6 months will have a one-time opportunity to renew, and they may get another 2 years of protection.
So DACA supporters and recipients are hoping that Congress is going to step in and provide some temporary protection or a more permanent path to legalization. If that doesn't happen, some DACA recipients could lose their status as early as March. What advice are you giving to that group of people?
I've been encouraging all DACA recipients, regardless of when their expiration date is, that they need to know and understand what their other options are. Some DACA beneficiaries may be eligible for other forms of protection.
Yeah, what are some of those other options?
Some DACA beneficiaries are eligible for green cards through family members or employers. Some folks already have those applications in the works. Others might be eligible for defenses to removal, including asylum if they fear violence or persecution in their home country, or cancellation of removal, which is for people who have been here for 10 years and can show that their removal would cause extreme hardship to a U.S. citizen, parent, spouse, or child. There are a number of other types of humanitarian protection. So everyone needs to understand their own case and see what they might be eligible for.
There are some people who will continue to receive DACA benefits as late as 2020. What is your advice to that group of people? I mean, the vast majority are in school or they're working. Should they just keep doing that?
Those folks should keep studying, keep working, and keep planning for their future in the United States. They should also see if there is some type of more permanent protection that they're eligible for, and they will also need to participate in the movement to pressure Congress to take action. Those 2 years will pass by fairly quickly, I imagine, and Congress moves slowly.
Now, the thing about DACA recipients is that these are immigrants who are documented, and the federal government knows, for the most part, exactly where to find them. Is that making people more worried that they will be tracked down and taken out of the country?
It certainly is, and a lot of people are very anxious about that right now. The Department of Homeland Security said today that for now, they are not referring all of their information about DACA beneficiaries to ICE. So they're not sending a huge list of people and saying, round these folks up as soon as their protection expires. However, DHS also said that that could change at any time. They're leaving that door open that they could use this information for enforcement purposes. So that is why I'm encouraging folks not to panic, but to know their rights, never to open the door for an ICE official because they almost never have a warrant, and never to speak with an ICE official or answer any questions from them before speaking to an attorney.
That's Lily Axelrod. She's an immigration attorney based in Memphis, Tennessee.